I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Beautiful, beautiful day. It's always a beautiful day. I'm just a beautiful day to teach liberty. Excited to be able to do that. Excited at the opportunities of teaching our young people. We taught last night almost 100 homeschool students a practical exercise in which I allow them to create government and deal with some very, very challenging issues. It is not only educational for the students, but it is educational for the parents. Such great questions come from these young people, grades 6 through 12. Such great realizations come to their parents watching this happen. Almost 100 homeschool students. What a blessing that is. Got to learn about liberty and the proper role of government. What is the proper role of government? Government is created to preserve the liberty of the people and protect their property. That's the whole purpose of government. Government is not created to be a provider, especially in the United States. Our central government was clearly not created to be a provider because we didn't create a kingdom. We didn't create kings. We created a constitutional republic where the people hold the power to provide for themselves, to govern themselves. And the central government's power is to protect the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, to protect our property and our lives. That's the whole purpose of government, to protect, not to infringe, not to rule, not to provide, and not to take. It's very interesting how far we've come, isn't it? Today I want to cover some things that you want to know. I asked the question on Facebook, what is constitutionally important to you? And I got so many good questions, so many good comments. So I want to cover them today. And there's no way I'm going to get through this whole list. But I've chosen a few real important ones. There's a couple big ones that I want to cover on another day just because they're big. And I want to be able to cover as much today as I can. And we'll take these other ones individually. For example, Nance Eric on Facebook. Now, these are Facebook names, obviously not. You know, I don't know if they're real names or not, but Nance Eric says, I would like to hear a review of Article 1, Section 8, quote, to provide for the calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repeal invasions, end quote. That's a big one, and it's a very important one, so I want to dedicate a good portion of the show on that issue, and we'll be covering that issue sometime in the future. The first one that I want to talk about is from Dennis Marburger. Dennis is a friend of mine. Good morning, Dennis. And Dennis says, Chris Ann, what powers are delegated to the feds, if any, and to what branch regarding immigration, prohibition of personal consumption choices, and war? He also asks what is delegated to the federal courts, and what is their constitutional jurisdiction, but that's another one of those that we're going to put aside for another day. We're going to handle that in a separate realm, because I think that we have come to the point where we need a better understanding of the federal courts and their jurisdiction, and I'd like to spend a little bit more time on that. But the answer about the federal government's power is a very simple answer, and I can really just direct you to one source for the best answer that you can have. Now, our founders talked about federal power quite a bit, and as a matter of fact, you want to have a good story about how this works, you need to go and read the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, because the Anti-Federalists were very afraid that the federal government would become a huge consumption machine. They were afraid that the federal government would usurp the power of the people in the states and take more power than what was delegated. And so they voiced their concerns, and in response to their concerns, the Federalist Papers are saying, you know, we hear you, but the way we have created this central government and the checks and balances that are in place and the power that remains in the states will prevent this central government from becoming the monster of power that you are afraid it will become. I hope you see the real benefit in reading both the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the concerns and the responses, because the concerns are what we should have been studying to our children. We should have been doing a two-part study with our kids from the very beginning. Number one, reading the Anti-Federalist Papers. What are the concerns that we should be looking out for in federal government? What are the things that we should be aware of that are dangers of a central government? What should we be watching for as a dangerous trend for our central government? That's course number one. The Anti-Federalist course then is course number, or I'm sorry, the Federalist Papers then is course number two. The response to the Anti-Federalists is no, this is not going to happen because these are the checks, these are the power checks that we have put in place to prevent that from happening. So course number two is, if we fail in course number one, what are the checks and balances that are available to us? What is the power that is placed in our hands? That is course number two. And so if we had been teaching our generations that there are specific dangers and specific things that we should be worrying about, I'm getting tongue-tied this morning, that we should be worrying about in federal government, but our framers also worried about those things, and they made a plan for those things, and they put checks and balances in place for those things to prevent the federal government from being the very thing that our framers, the Anti-Federalist framers, were concerned about. And so there is lots and lots of discussion over this. And so, Dennis, the long answer to your story is a study in the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist Papers will answer that question very, very completely. But you will see that they were worried that the president would become king. They were worried that the Congress would ignore the people. They were worried that the courts would leap out of their jurisdictions. But then in answer to all of those things, they said that can't happen because of this check and because of this balance. The interesting thing, however, Dennis, is this. If the people are ignorant of the checks and the balances, then do they really exist? I mean, obviously they exist because they're still there. But if you don't use them, then what good are they? My husband preaches a sermon in which he talks about a spare tire, right? And his application is faith. If you don't use your faith, then it's as if you have none at all. You're driving down the road and you have a flat tire. You pull over on the side of the road, you stand and you stare at the car. Oh my goodness, I have a flat tire. And you're just scratching your head and you're on your cell phone. You're wondering what to do. You call somebody to come and take you to the gas station. So you can, somebody pulls over, takes you to the gas station so that you can call a tow truck. You call a tow truck to come and get your car. The tow truck driver shows up and says, what do you want me to do? And you say, well, I've got this flat tire. Can you tow me to the station so we can get the tire fixed? And the tow truck driver says to you, do you have a spare in the trunk? And you say, well, yes, I do. And then the tow truck driver looks at you very puzzled and says, well, let's put the spare on and then I won't have to tow you. Well, there you have it. That whole time you had the spare tire in your trunk. You had everything that you needed yourself to fix the tire. But the fact that you did not recognize that the spare tire was in your trunk, and the fact that you refused to use the spare tire in your trunk, does that mean that the spare tire was never there? No, it was there. But your failure to use it makes it just as unavailable as if it was not there at all. People say all the time, the Constitution is broken and this whole system is broken. No, the Constitution is not broken. Our spare tire is exactly the way it's supposed to be. Our protections are there exactly the way they're supposed to be. We just refuse to use them. Why? Because we're uneducated. We don't even know it's there. Dennis, the answer to your question about the powers delegated to the federal government is in Federalist Papers 45 with James Madison. The powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. The powers delegated to the federal government through the Constitution are reserved to external objects, war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. That's it. Those are the only powers delegated to the federal government, war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. Madison says everything else belongs in the states. And that's it. Bottom line.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Dennis Marburger's question about the powers delegated to the feds is very simple. Remember, according to Madison, the father of the Constitution and Federalist 45, the only powers delegated to the federal government are war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. External objects, which is founders speak for foreign affairs. But he says, what powers are delegated to the feds and to which branch regarding immigration? Well, immigration is an interesting thing because the only power delegated to the federal government regarding immigration is to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies through the United States. Interesting they put those two things together, isn't it? This is Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4. And this is one of the reasons we have the central government. Number one, uniform rules. You see, if we're dealing with people who are coming into our union from a foreign country, because naturalization is a foreign affair, because it deals with foreign people coming into our country. And so naturalization is to be a uniform rule established by the central government so that a foreign person coming into the union knows what to expect. just one set of rules, just one set of criteria, not 50 different for each state. Because remember, if you remember from our studies previous and previous shows, the states are sovereign, independent governments, just like France, Spain, and Great Britain. There is no difference in Kansas, Nebraska, Florida, New York, than France, Spain, or Germany. They have the same power. That's how we were established. And so as a sovereign government, just like any of these foreign countries, they would have the power to create their own rules of naturalization. But we in our founders' wisdom, believed that if we were going to have a real naturalization process that was friendly to foreign immigrants, it would have to be uniform throughout the Union and not confusing between states. And so part of the purpose of the central government was to create a uniformed voice for the states in foreign affairs, and that included naturalization. So the only power that the feds have been delegated, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 4, is for creating a uniform rule of naturalization. That's it. The power to enforce those rules of naturalization then rests in the states. Because as Madison said, if it is not delegated to the feds, it remains in the states. So the only power delegated as far as immigration is to create the rules. The enforcement of those rules remains in the states. So the immigration customs enforcement branch of the government is operating outside the Constitution when it comes to enforcement of immigration laws. The enforcement of those laws should be left to the states. ICE should be on our coast, along our coasts, and along our borders, not the state's borders, but the Union's borders. ICE should be protecting our borders from people who refuse to follow the rules of naturalization, and securing the importation of foreign goods based on our treaties created by the feds. That's the purpose of ICE. To protect our borders from those who refuse to follow the rules of naturalization and to enforce treaties. Isn't that crazy? The very thing the federal government was delegated to do is the very power they refused to do. And in contrary to that, they want to do everything that's not been delegated to them. So there, Dennis, the power to prohibit personal consumption choices doesn't rest in the hands of the federal government. If you want that kind of tyrannical power in your government, it clearly remains with the states. Understanding that that's a tyrannical power, the government telling you what you can and cannot consume.
My mama always said I was born for this, and some people wouldn't like that I was different. It never really mattered how hard it would be, 'cause she filled me with love and the strength to lead. She said,
the Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Welcome back. And looks like Dennis's question has taken us two sections. That's okay. It's a very important question, and we had several people who wanted to hear the answer to this question, so this is a good one. So, in review, regarding immigration, the feds can only create the uniform rule of naturalization is up to the states for enforcement. The Immigration Customs Enforcement Division of government should be on our borders, protecting our borders from those who refuse to follow the uniform rules of naturalization, you know, like illegal immigrants, and enforcing our treaties. There is no delegation of power to the federal government to prohibit personal consumption choices. There is no delegation of power, let's just, while this is relevant, there is no delegation of power to force people to engage in medical procedures. And yes, I'm talking about immunizations. The federal government has no power to force us to immunize. Absolutely not. There is no delegated power in the federal government to force us to engage in medical procedures, especially when, time and time again, those medical procedures, those immunizations, have proven to be ineffective and even dangerous. You can believe the propaganda all you want about how these lies against immunizations are what are keeping people from becoming immunized. But if these lies are truly lies, then ask yourself, why is there an entire division of government whose only purpose is to compensate people and families who have been medically damaged by immunizations? Yes, there is an entire division of government whose existence revolves around paying off people who have been medically damaged by immunizations. Which, by the way, is crazy, because why is the federal government paying off people who have been damaged by immunizations created by private industries? Why? Because the federal government is subsidizing those industries. Merck, and who is one of our major immunization companies, and all the Johnson & Johnson, all these people who are creating these immunizations are being so heavily subsidized by our federal government that they create in the federal government a liability for these private companies' negligent acts. And we have an entire division in the federal government, go look it up, that pays off families whose children become autistic from immunizations. Oh, but I thought that was a lie, Chris Ann. Immunizations don't cause autism. Well, that's really crazy, because the federal government has been paying off families whose children have become autistic because of immunizations for decades. You know, the interesting thing is about these immunizations. I have a degree in biochemistry, so I can talk about this a little bit. Wherein the immunizations in and of themselves may not cause autism. And maybe that's what the studies are all about. But I believe, in my humble yet somewhat educated opinion, the cocktails that they create in these immunizations react with each other in such a way that we have no idea how they're going to affect our bodies. In and of ourselves, if you push away all the other bad things about the immunizations, they may not cause autism. But when you shove them in a cocktail and force them into the veins of our developing children, we have no idea how that all works together until they damage their bodies forever. We can also talk about the fact that these immunizations carry mercury in them. We have to hand out warnings that we're not supposed to be eating tuna because of the rising mercury levels in tuna, but then it's okay to shove mercury into the veins of our children to what? Keep them safe from what? And the most disgusting thing, you do this research. I am not lying to you. I am not speaking out of my rear end. You can find this all available to you in Truth and Internet. The companies admit this. Go find out the large number of immunizations that are created through aborted fetal cells. Aborted fetal material. We take aborted babies and make immunizations out of them. Go look at the whole list of immunizations. These companies have to admit that this is in there. Aborted babies in your immunization. How stinking disgusting is that? That we are shooting that into the veins of our children and the bodies of our children. Not only that, look up a civil case where a group of people have sued Merck, M-E-R-K, and the very measles inoculation that is in the news today, MMR. This group sued Merck because they found that the vaccination is ineffective. And so we're paying for something. This is the lawsuit. We're paying for something that is faulty, that does not work. And guess what? Merck lost. Because the lawsuit proved that their vaccine, MMR vaccine, is ineffective in many cases. It's a lemon. It's a car that won't run. And now we're going to mandate that our people take a vaccination that doesn't work, that has been proven not to work. And the lawsuit has ruled for compensation because it doesn't work. And you wonder why. We see people who have been vaccinated suffering from measles because the vaccination doesn't work. But then now we have to have governments mandating them because nobody in the mainstream media is talking about the fact that the MMR vaccination has been proven to be ineffective. And nobody in the media is talking about the truth about the dangers and the disgusting nature of the vaccinations that they want to force on us. How is it that vaccinating my child keeps your child safe when we have proven these vaccines don't even work? And so, personal consumption choices is not a power that's been delegated to the federal government, and that would include vaccinations. War. War has been delegated to the federal government as a specific power mentioned by James Madison in Federalist 45, but under very strict conditions. It must be a declaration by Congress, because war can only can be consented to by the people and the states. So the feds in the House of Representatives, being the direct representatives of the people and the voice of the people, must say yes. And in the Senate, being the voice of the states, must say yes on behalf of the states, and they must say yes together before we can go to war. And this, by the way, is a very interesting argument between the Anti-Federalists and the Federalists. Hamilton spends a great deal of time explaining how the power for war was delegated to Congress and not the president on purpose. Madison says that the executive branch is always more inclined to war because that's what executives do. Executives like war. They like the power that comes with war, and they like the benefit that comes to the executive branch through war. And so we specifically delegated the power of war to the Congress alone because we know executives are inclined to war. Hamilton says we did not delegate power of war to the executive branch because that is a power that a king holds, and we did not create a king. And you see, again, the Anti-Federalists and their concerns, the Federalists with their answers and the checks and balances. We are ignorant to both, and so we have neither. When did the progressives, George Garcia says, when did the progressives take foothold in our government? I think, George, the better answer to that question is when did the progressives take a foothold in our education system? If you want the complete story about when the progressives took over our education system, you need to download a book on the internet called The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, written by a brilliant woman by the name of Charlotte Iserbitt. I had the pleasure of meeting Charlotte one time. Charlotte was on Ronald Reagan's Education Council, and became alarmed at what she saw about the foreign influence and the Marxist influence of our education system, and became a whistleblower and started teaching about the dangers of the Marxist influence in our education system and the federal push for the Marxist influence of our education system. Her whistleblowing, by the way, which is little known to most people, resulted in her being fired from the Reagan administration because she wanted to warn us about this. The Marxists began taking over our education system in the 1880s, actually. Wilhelm Wundt, in 1832, was the founder of experimental psychology and the force behind its dissemination through the Western world. His foundational theory became the basis for teacher training for over 150 years, and Wilhelm Wundt taught that children were nothing more than stimulus response mechanism, nothing more than animated meat made up of neurons and electrochemical reactions for our manipulation. Edward Lee Thorndike and John Dewey is referred to as the father of our modern education, were students of Wilhelm Wundt. Thorndike, in 1903, was a professor of education and the writer of 507 books on the methods of teaching, which help form the basis of teacher training and philosophy today. He said that children could be equated to rats, monkeys, fish, cats, and chickens, animals that simply needed to be programmed. I'm trying to teach you about the progressive takeover of our education system.
The Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
George Garcia asked, when did the progressives take over our government? The better question is, when did the progressives take over our education system so that the people would be willing to accept progressive government? And it happened in the 1880s, began with a man named Wilhelm Wundt, the founder of experimental psychology, the mentor of Edward Lee Thorndike and John Dewey, the father of our modern education. John Dewey's not the guy of the Dewey Decimal System, by the way. That's a different Dewey. This is what John Dewey is heralded as, the father of modern education. He is actually the father of progressive education. He wrote the book Psychology, the most widely read and quoted textbook used in schools for teachers in this country. Dewey taught that the primary commitment to literacy was the greatest problem that the American school system faced. Listen to some of these quotes by Dewey. Now, I want to remind you that John Dewey is a signer of the Humanist Manifesto. The father of our modern education system, the greatest influence in teaching our teachers in our education system, is a signer of the Humanist Manifesto. Dewey says, the plea for predominance of learning to read in early education seems to me a perversion. He says, undue premium is put on the ability to read at a certain chronological age. The entertainment plus information motive for reading conduces the habit of solitary self-entertainment. Now remember, the humanist progressive manner is socialism, the collective. So we can't teach children to be independent and be happy on their own. They must be addicted to the collective. Dewey says, we violate the child's nature and render difficult the best ethical results. By introducing the child too abruptly to a number of special studies of reading, writing geography. The true center of correlation on the school subjects is not science, nor literature, nor history, nor geography, but the child's own social activities. Mere absorption of facts and truth is so exclusively an individual affair that it tends very naturally to pass into selfishness. There is no obvious social motive for the acquirement of learning. There is no social gain therein. Isn't that awesome? Socialism is the foundation for our education system since the 1900s. G. Stanley Hall, John Dewey's professor, taught that it was better to be illiterate. Listen to what G. Stanley Hall said. The knowledge which illiterates acquire is probably much larger proportion of it practical. Moreover, they escape much eye strain and mental excitement, and other things being equal are probably more active and less sedentary. Illiterates escape certain temptations, such as vacuous and vicious reading. Perhaps we are prone to put too high value both upon the ability to read and the discipline involved in doing so. Our progressive education system has produced illiterate people. And that should be no surprise that we graduate our high school seniors at 50% illiteracy rate. Having this progressive plan as the very foundation of America's educational system. The General Education Board was incorporated by Congress in 1902, endowed by John D. Rockefeller, and the purpose of the General Education Board, the beginning of the Department of Education, was to set up an educational laboratory to experiment with the very educational system that Wundt, Thorndike, and Dewey proposed. Frederick Gates, the director of this congressionally established organization, said, "In our dream, we have limitless resources, and the people yield themselves with perfect docility to our molding hands. The present educational conventions fade from our minds, and, unhampered by tradition, we work our own goodwill upon a grateful and responsive folk, who now accept progressive government because they have been taught, brainwashed, and fed progressive education." That's why what we're doing here at Liberty First is so important, traveling around the country and teaching. That's why your children must be learning what we teach, and you must be bringing them to our training. We have a lot of work to do, but we have the power because we have the truth. We are the light. God bless. See you tomorrow. We came to light.